Welcome to the Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Trucking Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Trucking, Avery Weiss. As Avery presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading the PDF or PowerPoint of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF and PowerPoint is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads for the Trucking Market Update, as well as the weekly Rail Market Update with Todd Tronowski and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 118 for the week of June 28th, 2021. Before we start, a reminder that you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. You can also download a PowerPoint presentation that includes images of those same charts you can use in your own presentations. I want to start off with an update of a development I discussed last week, which is the ongoing litigation over California's AB5. You might recall that last Monday, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit denied a request for what's called an en banc rehearing of the ruling that the federal law does not preempt California from enforcing AB5 as it applies to motor carriers. In case you haven't been following this issue, AB5 includes a so-called ABC test for worker classification that basically would outlaw lease owner operators because it declares that workers who perform the same work as firms that retain them, in this case, of course, transporting freight, must be treated as employees and not as independent contractors. So the new development since last week's podcast is that 2 days after the decision to deny the rehearing, the appeals court granted a request by the California Trucking Association for a stay in enforcement pending a U.S. Supreme Court decision on whether or not to review the appeals court ruling. If the U.S. Supreme Court considers the case, the stay will remain in place until the court rules. If the Supreme Court refuses to hear the case, the stay will be lifted immediately and California can enforce AB5 on carriers. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court agrees to review only a tiny percentage of the petitions for review it receives each year. But the chances for review are greatly improved because the First Circuit Appeals Court several years ago issued a ruling that is completely opposite this one on the preemption issue. That case involved a Massachusetts ABC test. And the Supreme Court often hears appeals when there is a direct conflict among appeals courts. Because the Supreme Court's term is basically at its end, it will be at least October before the Supreme Court rules on whether to hear the CTA petition for review. And then, of course, after that, if it does, it will be months later, possibly not even next year, although probably, before there is a decision in the case. Another issue I wanted to update is a potential infrastructure bill. The Biden administration and a bipartisan group of 10 senators last week reached agreement on the framework of an infrastructure package that would increase spending by $579 billion over 5 years for a total of $973 billion. The deal includes $109 billion more money for roads and bridges than they would get if we just took current authorizations and extended them out 5 years. Now, the agreement is a significant breakthrough in the progress toward enacting a bill, but it hardly guarantees success, as the framework is not tremendously attractive to many lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, both Republicans and Democrats. Many Republicans want less, many Democrats want far more. Meanwhile, separate legislation is still moving through both the House and Senate. As we have discussed in recent podcasts, those bills include significant policy changes related to trucking and rail. The House is getting ready to consider, potentially within the next week or two, its version of the bill, which includes, as we've discussed, some pretty significant provisions, including an increase in minimum insurance requirements, a restoration of public CSA scores, and screening for sleep apnea. Okay, let's talk about the spot market for the week ended June 25th, which is week 25 of the year. Total spot load postings in the truckstop.com system were basically unchanged at an increase of just 0.1%. However, a decline in flatbed volume offset solid gains in dry van and refrigerated. Volume remains far higher than normal, but the segments mostly are moving in line with what we would expect from seasonal expectations. If spot volume follows seasonal patterns, we would expect volume to moderate after the current week, week 26. However, with all the stimulus and supply chain disruptions and capacity deficits, we really have no reason, at least not yet, to expect the normal seasonal weakness. Certainly last year we saw no seasonality at all, apart from declines during weeks that include holidays. Speaking of which, weeks 27 and 26, the current week, will be interesting since the Independence Day holiday falls on the weekend. It's possible there then that we will see some easing in volume during both weeks. Load volume in week 25 was about 95% above the same 2020 week and about 134% above the five-year average. And as I've said before, we look at 15 through 19 as the five-year period because 2020 was so extreme, both on the downside and the upside. Now, week 25 was the first week since early March that volume was less than double the same week last year. But this is going to become increasingly common if load volume were merely to hold steady as it has been doing over the past 3 weeks. And of course, as I said earlier, seasonal expectations would actually have load volume easing. Total truck postings were down 1.4%, and the market demand index, which is the ratio of loads to trucks in the truckstop.com system, was slightly higher than the week before. Okay, let's talk about the segments. Dry van load postings rose 9.8%. Recent volume gains appear to be a bit stronger than what we've come to expect in June. Volume is about 55% higher than the same week last year and about double the five-year average. Refrigerated load postings increased more than 10%. Volume has been rising fairly strongly, but that is very much in keeping with seasonal expectations. Refrigerated postings were about double the same week last year and about 145% above the five-year average. Flatbed load postings declined 5.8%. Volume typically does fall off in June for flatbed, but recent declines are perhaps a bit deeper than expectations. On the other hand, flatbed is stronger than the other segments relative to last year, as load postings are about 124% higher. Volume is about 152% higher than the five-year average. Okay, let's talk spot rates. The broker-posted rate per mile, excluding fuel surcharges, increased about 1.5 cents and were about 45% above the same week last year. Dry van rates were up 7.5 cents and were down, and were about 40% higher year over year. Refrigerated rates rose nearly 16 cents and were about 47% higher than the same 2020 week. Flatbed rates declined about 1 cent and were about 48% higher than the same week last year. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about fuel. Given that crude oil prices keep drifting higher, it's not surprising that we saw diesel prices rise 1.3 cents a gallon to an even $3.30 for the week ended June 28th. That's the highest price since November 2018. We have seen 9 straight weeks of increases that have resulted in a gain of nearly 18 cents a gallon. However, of that 18 cents, nearly 11 cents came in just 2 weeks in May, around the time of the ransomware attack on the Colonial Pipeline. As for crude prices, West Texas Intermediate on Friday, June 25th, closed above $74 a barrel for the first time since early October 2018. Okay, let's wrap up our weekly data by addressing the unemployment situation, which was little changed in the latest week. Initial claims for benefits decreased by 7,000, but that was after an upward revision of 6,000 in the prior week's data. First-time claims are still running about 160,000 higher than the average during 2019, even though we are seeing job openings in the economy at record levels. Total continued claims for benefits declined. Continued claims in state programs were down 144,000 to 3.39 million. Continued claims in the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program fell by 175,000 to 5.95 million. But claims in the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program rose 108,000 to 5.3 million. Okay, let's dig into the monthly indicators, starting with the manufacturing sector. While manufacturing output is just now getting back to pre-pandemic levels, demand for manufactured goods is significantly stronger. After posting their first month-over-month decline since the contraction in April, orders for durable manufactured goods rose 2.3% in May, and that's the strongest gain in 4 months. Total durable goods orders in May were 9.7% above February 2020, seasonally adjusted, although I should point out that orders in that month were nearly 8% below October 2019 levels. In contrast to April, orders for transportation equipment were a major contributor to May's strength. Excluding that sector, durable goods orders in May were up just 0.3%. Motor vehicles and parts orders rose 2.1% after a plunge of more than 8% in April, and civilian aircraft orders jumped 27.4%. Now, aircraft orders had also risen sharply in April, but that industry is much smaller than automotive, so the impact was not as great. Durable goods orders, excluding transportation equipment, in May were 16.3% higher than in February of last year. Orders for core capital goods, that's non-defense capital goods excluding aircraft, held basically steady in May after solid growth in April. Core capital goods orders, which are a good measure of business investment, were nearly 16% higher in May than they were in February of last year. Okay, on to inventories. And the automotive sector looms at least as large in inventories and sales as it does in manufacturing. The Census Bureau reported this week that retail inventories for motor vehicle and parts dealers fell another 5.3% in May. Inventories in May are an astounding 33.4% below those in February of last year. Just this year, inventories have plunged more than 20% due to both a decline in supply and an increase in demand. The second and third rounds of stimulus in January and March fueled strong sales of automobiles and trucks, just as semiconductor shortages were sharply curtailing automotive production. Retail sales for motor vehicles and parts dealers in May were about 29% higher than in February of last year. Sales fell 3.7% after a surge in March and April. Limited supply of popular makes and models probably was a significant factor in weaker sales in May. The severe depletion of retail automotive inventories resulted in total retail inventories in May that were 8.7% lower than they were in February 2020. Excluding motor vehicles and parts, however, Retail inventories were 4.8% higher in May than they were in February of last year, a comparison that is at least slightly stronger than would have been expected absent the pandemic. The upshot is that while retail inventories excluding automotive remain extremely lean, the situation is strictly a function of extraordinarily strong spending on goods that, of course, is fueled by trillions of dollars in stimulus, and the inability to spend, or at least difficulty in spending, money on travel and entertainment during the pandemic. Speaking of consumer finances, we got data last week on personal income and spending. Dwindling payouts of stimulus payments, most of which were distributed in March and to some extent April as well, are the culprit for a 2% decline in personal income in May. Organic changes were positive as wages and salaries ticked up 0.8%. Personal income in June might be lower as many states withdraw from federal assistance programs for unemployment benefits, and the effect will occur again in September when augmented benefits in nationwide. On the other hand, starting in July, a large number of Americans will automatically begin receiving monthly payments of advanced child tax credits of up to $250 per child under 18 or up to $300 for each child under 6. And that those will decline as family income goes higher, although those income limits are pretty high. In the aggregate, those payments, which will continue through December, should more than offset the loss of funds due to the end of the augmented unemployment benefits. Meanwhile, consumer spending held flat with April, which was itself 0.9% higher than March's stimulus-fueled jump of 5%. As was the case in April, spending on services outpaced spending on goods. Services spending increased 0.7%, while goods spending declined 1.3%. Services spending is inching closer to a full recovery to pre-pandemic levels, but it was still 1.2% below February levels in May. Spending on goods was 19.7% higher in May than in February of last year. Spending on non-durable goods declined 0.4%, while spending on durable goods fell 2.8%. A major element of that decrease, of course, was the drop in spending on motor vehicles and parts, which we discussed earlier. Non-durable goods spending was nearly 13% higher in May than it was in February of last year, while durable goods spending was more than 33% higher. Although consumer spending remains close to record levels, the same is not true for home sales. In May, sales of both new and existing homes fell, and both have been on a downward trend for several months. Sales of new single-family homes dropped 5.9% after a 7.8% decline in April. Sales of new homes were 5.3% above February 2020, but as recently as January, they were 36% above pre-pandemic levels. Sales of existing single-family homes eased about 1% in May, according to data from the National Association of Realtors. The decrease was the smallest in 4 months, but it was the fifth straight decline. Since December, sales of existing homes are down about 14%, and they are lower than February of 2020 by 0.6%. Now, the National Association of Realtors attributed the decline mostly to a lack of inventory, although it also noted that affordability for first-time buyers has become an issue. Home prices have been rising steadily during the pandemic, and May saw the highest median prices ever for both new and existing single-family homes. One factor that has clearly bolstered home sales during the pandemic has been very attractive financing. However, the latest week did raise some slight concerns on that front. Freddie Mac reported that the average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage rose 0.9% to 3.02%. Mortgage rates were above 3% for the first time in 10 weeks, and, perhaps more significant, the weekly increase was the largest in 4 months. Freddie Mac said that economic growth and inflation likely would gradually push mortgage rates higher throughout the rest of the year. Finally, let's address international trade in goods. Goods exports fell 0.3%, while imports rose 0.8%. Exports of consumer goods were up 5.6%, while exports of vehicles fell 4.7%. Within imports, foods, feeds, and beverages rose 5.7%, and industrial supplies were up 4.5%. The big decliner was capital goods, which were down 2%. Compared to February of last year, goods imports are 4.9% higher, led by were 4.9% higher, led by exports of foods, feeds, and beverages, which were nearly 24% higher in May than they were in February of last year. On the other hand, exports of vehicles were nearly 15% lower. Goods imports were nearly 18% higher in May than in February of last year. Most major categories of imports were more than 20% higher than in February of last year, but vehicle imports were still 4.5% lower. Okay, so that's it for the week. Let's recap. Enforcement of California's AB 5 is on hold pending a possible Supreme Court review. Spot volume held steady as van freight gains offset a decline in flatbed. Diesel prices rose for the 9th straight week. The unemployment situation was little changed. Durable goods orders moved higher in May, while orders for core capital goods were close to flat. Retail automotive inventories fell sharply in May. Personal income declined while spending was flat. Home sales fell as prices continued to set records. And goods exports fell slightly as good imports rose slightly. Finally, we now have essentially all the economic data for May. Check out the presentation accompanying this podcast for slides summarizing consumption and production indicators in May relative to both February of last year and April of this year. Join us next week for a discussion of the jobs report and the latest data on the authorization of new trucking companies. So that's it for FTR's Trucking Market Update, episode 118 for the week of June 28th, 2021. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF and PowerPoint of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.